Okay. Today is Sunday, May 2nd, 2021, and it's a very, very sad weekend, a very sad Shabbat, a very sad Sunday, a day of national mourning. You don't realize how close it came to this very institution. Yom Moch was just a foot or two away from the whole tragedy. Torah Shraga was there, most of Torah Shraga. And it's quite a saga. They had to meet their bus at 1:30, which saved some lives because they started leaving to catch the shuttle bus a few minutes to one. And as they're coming down, the onslaught is beginning, people rushing up, rushing down the stretches. God have mercy. They finally, it's a long story, they finally, instead of 1:30, the buses caught up with them at 4:30 a.m. because the whole area was closed off, and the shuttle bus took them, I don't think Yom even knows where, to some shopping mall. Do you know in what city?
Rosh Pina.
Rosh Pina, in the shopping mall, you can imagine. And you couldn't reach the buses in the parking lot because there was no tikshoret, as you know. And God have mercy, the blood that mixes Teaneck, New Jersey, Brisk, Shalavim, Montreal, the Israelis, the Toldot Aron. And again, I saw this morning already people are quoting the Rambam that I always quote, Hilchot Taniyot, that when some tragedy happens, you have to ask yourself why. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want out of us? I think here the answer is very simple. We, from Jews, have treated life, at least not some of us in our community, the concept of Pikuach Nefesh has become very secondary. We saw funerals. I'm still haunted. I had nightmares last night. Remember Rosh Gedolei Yisrael, Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbanim, the greatest Rebbeim, Hasidic Rebbeim, and they died of Corona. And at their funerals, thousands of people pushing. What has to happen now, and everyone is finding fault, there was this report, that report, years ago, close down the Meiron, don't allow the celebration, political pressure. Let's be positive and let's state loud and clearly the government has to step in, eminent domain, take over the whole area. It's owned by Hegdashim, rivaling each other, and work it out that there be an area, safety, passage, and limit. If the area can hold 10,000 people, so you give the tickets out, it has to be limited. Pikuach nefesh is toicha kol haTorah kula, alach et kama v'kama divrei Zohar. I don't want to tell you, there must be some Litvakin who are probably questioning the entire concept of Meiron and all that goes with it. But halacha l'maisa, that's the way I view the situation, but my heart is very heavy. It's beyond words. Every last community, you look at the names, their families I know, families I taught, relatives, people, Englar, there was a judge, I'm even afraid to ask if that's part of his family, it was a Supreme Court judge, Yehuda Tzadik, lives a few blocks from me, Englar, well-known name. I taught Englar in the Kollel, was a cousin from that was from Hillcrest. All right, let me go one step further. I've received literally hundreds of inquiries about why you and what's happening. And it's a very, also, it's so depressing, very sad. On one hand, YU has a tremendous problem. If you take money from the government, you have to live up to their demands. The world today is totally idol worship. The idol they worship is themselves. God plays no role in the Western world today. On our money it says, in God we trust, one nation under God, and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, that's repeating, ma, ma, where's my pa in the White House, rah, rah, rah. That was a mantra, Grover Cleveland Alexander, when he ran for president, I think the second time. They defeated him because he had a child out of wedlock. Today, he'd be a hero. Everyone would vote for him. He's part of the crowd, the way the world lives. No sanctity, no holiness. Ish hayashav yanav yaaseh. We decide what words of the Torah taken, simply discarded. Old Testament, New Testament, church is empty. It's beyond comprehension. Europe, I don't have to elaborate. France, it reminds me when Mayor Kahane was killed, they put the person on trial. He killed Mayor in front of 300 people. The jury found him innocent. No, I don't have to go further. What happened in France? Throws a Jewish woman out of the window, and he was under the influence of drugs. No, you can kill, call it Olam Kulo, and the influence of drugs, you walk away scot-free. Shem Yerachem. YU was caught in a tremendous crossfire because they separated the yeshiva from the university, and the university does take money, and they have to live up to the standards. And these people, I understand they're three ringleaders, if I have the facts correct, and they would rather see Yeshiva University closed down and an institution that began in 1886, because they're absolutely right, and people like Rakefet, this is the liberal thinking. Everyone else is wrong. They're right, and God have mercy on the world. There's a pasuk in the Torah, Toeva. Well, the Lancia is not the first pasuk we changed. The other side of the coin is what's happened here. Again, I don't know what the truth is. I can only go by the headlines, screaming headline in Jerusalem Post on the front page. A woman was appointed rabbi of a shul in Efrat, and YU's name is brought in, Rabbi Kenny Brander, Rabbi Steve Riskin. But the big quote is from Rabbi Kenny Brander, how proud we are, far women can go. Kenny Brander, Rabbi Brander, Dr. Rabbi Dr. Kenny Brander is a Talmud of the Rav. He was very close to the Rav. It's hard for me to conceive that the stories as they portrayed it. It's one thing if you have a rabbi, a male and a female. I'm not opposed. Beautiful. The female is a ritual director, or call her a ritual advisor, or a spiritual advisor. I came up with names already, R.A. and S.A., if you recall my lectures. And she, men and women have to be separate. We can't have men deal with women today. We can't have women deal with men. God have mercy, the world in which we live, how we're influenced, what has become of sex. It's no more than a simple commodity. It's not sex anymore. Sex once was an attraction, was love, was commitment, was responsibility. You follow me, Binyamin? And today, nothing. I go eat a steak. So I go sex here. God have mercy. But if she's the rabbi, the way the Jerusalem Post portrayed it, and the Jerusalem Post, I don't know what happened to that newspaper. It's anything against Torah, pluralism, reform, conservative, massive assimilation, intermarriage, the end of the Jewish people, a silent Holocaust. That doesn't bother them. But that the rabbinate here has a monopoly, that we want kashrut in the public thoroughfare, Shabbat in the public thoroughfare, and Tarat Mishpacha Yichus in the public thoroughfare, that bothers them. Pluralism. It hurts. So what do? You have the lady, someone won a wedding, Misadar Kedushin. All right, so now we'll get involved. Can a woman be Misadaret Kedushin? We'll wind up, the Chatan will make the brachat himself, which may be the original minhag, that the Chatan made the brachat himself. An aid to a wedding. Geirut, Dayanim, Geirut, women. Ribbono shel Olam. A drasha, the kila wants a drasha, so she's going to get up in the middle of davening and dashin the far musaf, right after the kiddush club and right before musaf. And this is what Yiddishkeit has become, and why you graduates put their stamp of approval. It was a very hard weekend for me. The Post article, and I met people on Wednesday, Thursday, the questions about why you in America, the Post article here, and with such pride, the rabbi, the women, the only spiritual leader. I can't believe that it's true, but I don't believe headlines, but anything is possible. I can't say no anymore. Anything is possible in this world. And then what happened on Thursday, You got to be made out of steel. The Eibishter should help. We should just go mechayil el chayil, mach Hashem Elokim dima mi'al kol panei panim, and we should never have a tragedy like this again, but we should learn from it and do what has to be done and repair and rebuild. And nechumim, tanchumim to all the families, to Brisk, to Shalavim, to Toldat Aaron, and everyone else caught up in the great tragedy. You have to give credit to Abu Kabir. All 45 bodies were identified, and I understand this is without Chilul Shabbos. You know, you saw what happened. They worked around the clock. I believe the 45th body was, if I understood the news correctly, was just identified, and all the bodies have been released for burial. I think there's just the 45th will be released later today. So mamish, there was a burial as quickly as possible with such a mega tragedy. Okay, let me go further. The Torah has to save us. Lima Torah, halavai, it can bring us further. Rabbi Reuben, I just want to tell you, I have your message, and I'll check. I have the letter. I'll make a copy for you, and in my next shift to you of the freebies, I'll include the letter. It's a very, very important letter of the Rav that just appeared. And people, again, I go on again about this. If I start speaking about it, I'll spend the next 20 years on this letter. But it has to be seen in context, and there's no question that in 1947, the Rav, along with any other thinking person, was caught up in messianic fervor about we're going to have a state of Israel. If you didn't feel that, then there's something the matter with you. And even it's related, in the name of the, I heard this from the Brisker Rav's family. And they said, even the Brisker Rav said, the Eibishtotnus gegeben ha-shmeichel, that God smiled at us with the Chavtet November, and then afterwards, Hei Iyar. Okay. Anyway, I want to go further now. And last week's share, again, it caused a lot of discussion. I don't know if to be happy with the discussion or to be sad, but it's a reflection of Lo Aleinu, where we stand. People are people, and it hurts someone that grew up in the Mussar world and saw the Jews that I saw in my youth, what the reality is. And I want to tell you, Baruch Shekivanti, I couldn't believe it. If you recall last week's shiur, we spoke about the Noda B'Yehuda, and again, I'll review it in a second. And I got involved in a whole discussion of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde about the Noda B'Yehuda and about the Yehuda Meshi Zahav. So I have to tell you, in Olam Katan, one of the beautiful freebies that are given out, what do you think? I can't believe it. There's my whole talk from the class written out word by word. Either the person was listening, Harav Lior Lavi, I don't know who that is, or Baruch Shekivanti, Shnei Neviyim Mitnavdim B'Signon Echad. The title is Al Toafat Dr. Jekyll Mr. Hyde. Exactly what we spoke about in class. But anyway, the starting point was with Reb Menashe Klein, Chelik Yud Aleph, Siman Tuf Nun Aleph, and the simple question, can you make a siyum on a Sefer Musa? Where I grew up, we only made a siyum on a Masechet from Shas. But then later in life, I saw people make a siyum on, for instance, Mishnayot Seder Moed, Mishnayot Seder Zrayim, etc. Now, evidently, according to this letter, you see, it became more widely observed that any holy Sefer that you finish, you make a siyum, make a Sudat Mitzvah. All right, Kol HaMabe HaReza Meshubach. So, Rav Menashe Klein right away quotes the Noda B'Yehuda that the Noda B'Yehuda punched out the Sifrei Musar. Well, if he quotes the Noda B'Yehuda, we have to see the Noda B'Yehuda. And as I told you, this is one of the most famous tshuva the Noda B'Yehuda ever wrote. And it's a fascinating tshuva. A lot can be discussed about this tshuva. First of all, there's the question, which is a shocking question, at least to me in this modern world. Maybe I'm the only one who gets shocked. But could you imagine a Talmud Chacham was eskes? By the way, Norm, I apologize, but I have a whole flu of students here, and some of them stayed up all night. I can see Florida, I can see Chicago, I can see Brooklyn looking at me now. So the Nodav Yehuda was asked the question, a big Talmud Chacham carried on an affair with his mother-in-law for 3 years. All right, I explained to you, it's not hard to understand. My life experience has been a man falls for a certain type of woman. There's a lot of research. I remember BBC once ran programs, must be in the 70s, back in the 70s. And there's no rhyme or reason to this. It's you as an individual, what attracts you. A woman is not as a physically attracted to a man. In other words, look at Woody Allen. He's the ugliest guy I ever saw. But he had no problem with one woman, another woman, a third woman, his stepdaughter. I need not elaborate. I eat a tzaddik isenish. So Woody Allen, who's basically my age, I think he's a year older. A man of ability, it doesn't matter what he looks like, the woman. But a man, the woman has to be in his eyes. Shekachin the Hevelayofi, if I can quote Aaron Reichheffer to you. Sure, Shekachin the Hevelayofi, Shiratim he Katalal. It's when a woman has Chain the Yofi. Then she can afford to say it's not important. Then she'll praise my Yirat Hashem. But if a woman doesn't have Chain the Yofi, it doesn't get off the floor. That's the level of Yirat Hashem you're not going to reach. If there's no Chain the Yofi, the guy's going to walk away. So it's not hard to understand if he was attracted to the daughter-in-law's looks, could very well be. She looks like her mother, so he's attracted to the mother-in-law. All right, at the end of 3 years, he wants to do tshuva, and you see that this person is a Nodav Yehuda. This is not a Johnny-come-lately, as I told you. The Nodav Yehuda would call me a Talmud Chacham, a Tzuvah de Rabbanan, a Yerei V'Shalem, a Matmid. The Nodav Yehuda describes this guy like he stepped out of, Lakewood, the Reitz, and the Chvei Seger and Satma put together. Okay, so he turns to the Nodav Yehuda, and he two shaylas. One shayla, and here I have to deal with it today. One shayla was, does he tell the father-in-law? And it's a very long tshuva. I'll mention some of the sources in a second. But the Nodav Yehuda reaches the conclusion, you don't have to go to Beit Din, you can tell him quietly, better you should tell him you're the one, you should cry. And if he believes you, he absolutely has to divorce his wife. I mean, could you imagine the situation? You're splitting up a couple, a husband and wife. What's the daughter, his real wife, going to say? What he did to her mother, her father? So Nodav Yehuda says, do it shtila hate, quietly, but he does require him to confess. Okay. On this point, I want to thank Yomo, and believe me, I am happy. I feel bad. I mean, it's hard to say, thank God you're safe, but thank God you're safe. The heart breaks for the other 45, and I think there are 13 or 14 still in the hospital. Two of them are in very serious condition, but they say they've made slight improvement. So it's amazing. Yomo sent me a source that this Nodav Yehuda was widely discussed. And here, it's a website called Das Torah. That's the name of the website. I know the person. I met him, the person who handles this website, or it's his website. He should have refuah shleima. He had a stroke at a certain point, as I recall. But this is from December 6, 2012. Das Torah, Issues of Jewish Identity. And he raises this very question. must husband be told about wife's adultery? And you can't believe how many people comment on this topic. And halacha lemaisa, the recent achronim paskin against the Noda B'Yehuda. You have here, let me just get it right, yeah. You have here from the Shevet HaLevi. Shevet HaLevi is Reb Shmuel HaLevi Wuzna. Reb Shmuel HaLevi Wuzna, a very fascinating individual, grew up in Vienna basically, grew up in a well-to-do Austro-Hungarian Chatam Sofer family. When you speak of Hungary, you have to remember there was a Hungary near Germany, Austro-Hungary near Austria. Again, these countries changed, Czechoslovakia, Romania. And then there was a different part of Hungary, which was near Poland. I believe that's what the Galicia was once part of that area. It was, Galicia doesn't exist today, but there once was a little country, but that, and it was part of Poland, not part of Poland, part of Hungary, not part of Hungary, and that area is where you have the Galiciana. But the Austro-Hungary area, you had very refined Chatam Sofer people, influenced to a certain degree by Germany, by the Hirschian school, and that's where the Shevet HaLevi grew up. Now, the Shevet HaLevi was a tremendous, tremendous matmid. And even as a child, growing up in this area, people marveled at this young man. Later, they make a beautiful shidduch for him, and you got to give him credit. He insisted to get out. His in-laws were against. Finally, they reached a compromise that he would go with his wife, but the young child would remain behind. I think Chaim Meir was the name of the child. And the grandparents would take care of him until it would be easier to go to Palestine. The wind-up was they didn't see this child again for 7 or 8 years. With miracles, they survived the Holocaust. The children were hidden. I mean, the story is unbelievable. And they came in Aliyah through Aliyah Bet. And they give credit. If you read his biography, they give credit to the Mapilim. They give credit to the people who risked their lives to come down to the beaches in Tel Aviv, the beaches in Haifa, and helped everyone come ashore in the middle of the night when they thought the British weren't watching, when they felt they could get away with it. Not always did they. Sometimes they were caught. Cyprus, you all know the story. And the Shevet Levi reaches Yerushalayim, goes on, the Chazon Ish brings him to Bnei Brak. He organizes Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, where he had been a student, Yachal, a Talmud of Rav Meir Shapiro, and he goes on to reach the age of 102. Many, many volumes of the Shevet HaLevi, I think there might be 10 volumes, so you can correct me, but there are at least 10 volumes of the Shevet HaLevi, Shelet and Shevet. All right, I just want to mention that the eldest son who survived with miracles and joins him and succeeds him, he has children all over the world, in Muncie, in London. His mother wound up in Borough Park. I mean, it's an interesting family. And he has children all over the world. But the son who succeeded him here in Bnei Brak died of corona. You may have seen that the father died a few years ago. Again, that was a terrible funeral. That's the funeral where there was so much pushing and shoving. Two people were stampeded to death during the funeral. I may be wrong on the number, but two is what remains in my mind. And that was the Shevet HaLevi. Yachal, I don't know what happened today. Must be a grandson took over, or another son, a younger son. If you look in to Shelet and Shuvat HaLevi, looking into Siman Chelek Shmini Chet and Siman Resh Pei Zion. And here he has that exact question about Shuva, and this person has been from for years, but one thing bothers him. I'm calling from the Shuva. Today he's chared l'dvah Hashem, but he sinned with an eshet ish. And that bothers him. Does he have to tell her husband that he sinned with her? And here he quotes the Divrei Chaim. Again, you'll find all the sources. You can check it out. I saw some of these sources, the Divrei Chaim. The Reb Chaim Sansava, he dealt with this problem. In addition to the Shevet Levi, I have to tell you that in modern times, the Rav Dov Fisher, I'm quoting from one of the Fisher brothers who was, Rav Yisrael Yaakov Fisher, let me get the name right, he's a brother, Rav Shlomo Fisher. Rav Shlomo Fisher's daughter went to Mechollah in the time I taught there, I remember her well. But Rav Yisrael Yaakov Fisher, in his Sefer, deals with exactly the same problem. Eben Yisrael, Siman Pei Hei. And you have now three different sources. You have the Divrei Chaim, that Reb Chaim Sansava. We're dealing here with Gadol Shebegadolim. Reb Shmuel Halevi Vosman, the Shevet Halevi. Reb Yisrael Yaakov Fisher in his Ibn Yisrael, and three different sources deal with exactly the same question, and all three take issue with the Noda B'Yehuda, and Paskin Lahalacha, you don't have to tell the husband. And one of the reasons, they're Mitzarev Snifim, those of you that heard my lectures over the generations know what I'm talking about. You put together various viewpoints. One viewpoint, and it's brought down already in Rishonim, that no one can testify she actually committed adultery and be sure unless you have two Edom that were there and saw the Maisa's Nut. If you don't have the two Edom, then no one has to believe you. That's number one. Number two, when you see in Evanescence, this is widely discussed, the husband, if you tell him his wife committed adultery and he says, I don't believe you, he does not have to send away, does not have to divorce her. And they put together various shitot that are mekil, and they paskin lahalacha against the Noda B'Yehuda. It's very fascinating. Three achronim, no one comes near as far as fame. The Noda B'Yehuda is one of a kind, but three achronim paskin against the Noda B'Yehuda, and halacha lemaisa, this is the way we paskin. Yomo, and you have to see all the commentary in the Das Teira. Yomo was so worried someone would hear the shir and then run and tell his father-in-law, the husband, or the paramour that your wife has sinned and it would break up a marriage. I think he put a note. When the shiur was put up last week, he put a note, not to paskin lahalacha like the Noda B'Yehuda until you hear the next shiur. All right, so we can be mekil yesh hami l'smoch. Then the Noda B'Yehuda gets involved with the tshuva. And here you get involved with Tshuvat HaMishkal, it's called. And Tshuvat HaMishkal, see, here's where academic studies and the yeshiva world either synthesize or clash. It depends on your viewpoint. We never lived in an igloo, I'll put it that way. We're always affected by the outside world. Even the finest ghetto is permeated by winds. Nowadays, in the year 2022 we are today, in the year 2022, so you go to Meir Shearim, you walk out of Meir Shearim, go a few blocks, you're in a different world. There's no way to have a perfect ghetto. So there's no question, according to the academics, that the Jews of the Middle Ages, particularly in Catholic countries we're talking about, were influenced by the Catholics, and the Catholics did penance in public, and they shamed people, burned people at the stake, they whipped people, There was no end to what the Catholics did. Lo aleinu, we suffered. So the whole concept of Tshuvat HaMishkal comes into our world. Now, are there sources for Tshuvat HaMishkal? Absolutely not. If you learn Hilchot Tshuva of the Rambam, if you learn Masechet Yoma, Hilchot, if you learn Masechet Taniyot, right, our concept, yes, to come close to God, regret, vidui, to be humble. Fasting plays a role, but fasting has nothing to do with the Geish concept. Fasting has to do with Yom Kippur, right? It begins right there in Torah Hashem Tamima. But some of these concepts, like lying in the snow during the winter, where do you have sources for this? So the Noda Yehuda here says, I can't really give you an answer. These sources are not Chazal, are not in Paiskim. I have nowhere to turn. And this is where he gets involved in his polemic against the Sifrei Musa. And what does he mean by his polemic against the Sifrei Musa? What does he mean by the Sifrei Musa? This too remains a question. Doesn't quote any Svarim. Obviously, he means, in order to put it together, we have to go back to some of the pietistic literature of the Hasidei Ashkenaz. And there you take Sefer Hasidim, Sefer Rokach, there's quite a literature, and you'll find the overtones of this Tshuvat HaMishkal. Sometimes you find concepts there, and we'll come to it now. Much later, God should spare me, I have where there's a whole machlokes over Sefer Hasidim with Reb Moshe Feinstein and Reb Menashe Klein. Sometimes you'll find concepts that are really against the open halacha. And that may very well be what he's referring to when he says the Sifrei Musa that are the source of this are absolutely not reliable. We can't understand where they're coming from. He uses, I would say, a term that's derogatory about them, that it's, we say in Hebrew, we'd say, it's a svara from your stomach. And that's not a compliment. And that's essentially the term he uses. He says, lo uchalim sashorish bedivrei ha-gemara v'haposkim, and they talk about fasting and how many days and every sin and Tshuvat HaMishkal and the enjoyment you had now to suffer. And he says, I find it very hard to answer. But then he continues the tshuva and he says, generally speaking, I'm very lenient when it comes to such a question. But here, the sin was very great. Eshadish, I mean, it's a fee of a mita, it's not a simple matter. Avopato belo klum I efsha. And bifrat lefi rov hatmadat hachet. In other words, what he's saying here is, look, someone who sins once, twice, this guy 3 years. So he says, I can't not say anything. And then he begins what he thinks the person should do. First of all, he says he should learn Sifrei Musa. Which Sifrei Musa should he learn? So again, do you notice the Noda B'Yehuda, Chovat HaLavavot, the Shlach HaKodesh, but only from these Sfarim, b'makom she'eino midaber b'nistarot. And then he goes on, Hilchot Tshuva of the Rambam, and to say Tehillim with Kavana. Now, you see, the Noda B'Yehuda, and this takes us to Kever Rashbi. It takes me back to my Rebbeim, who I received the Torah from. Takes me back to Reb Noach Bonstein and Reb Yeruchim Gerelik. And what do we have in the Torah? Torah Shebaal Peh, Torah Shebichtav. But it has to be within a framework. It has to be within the logic of the Torah system. I don't say the logic of the Western world, but the logic of the Torah system. You come along with Kabbalah, then Old Yehuda could not handle it. And I can tell you the most famous tshuva in Old Yehuda, which I quoted in my lectures in Chassidut. Again, I hope you've heard all my lectures, but it's since 78 I've given many, many lectures in the Kollel. I dealt with Chassidut, and I dealt with a simple matter. You all counted Omer last night. All right, so before the Omer, we said, where I come from, immediately finished the Kaddish, Baruch Atah Hashem, there's no L'shem Yichud, no Hinini Muchan Umuzumana, no singing and shminging and binging and dinging, a bracha, and count the Yoma with meaning, with feeling, Dan HaRachman, and that's it, Olenu L'shem Beach. Oh, but if you are involved in Kabbalah, L'shem Yichud, Kitzur Berichu, Tamir, B'Kavna, I always say Friday night, show me one person who understands what he's saying before Baku Nusach Svad, Yichud, Yichud. I once wandered into Ol Aaron and they had a chazan. He spent 20 minutes on those 10 sentences. And I wanted to ask him afterwards, do you know what you were saying? But all right, I don't want to be a chutzpan. So the Nadi Yehuda got the question, what's the Nusach for L'Shem Yichud? No, you're familiar, it's a very famous tshuva. No, everyone went crazy. Ask me what the Nusach is. Who the heck says you have to say it? Halavai, we should say what we have to say. And he's very strong against Hasidut and that tshuva. I can tell you with Reb Noach Bornstein, and again, you got to know who I'm talking about. Reb Noach Bornstein was the Brisker Rav's top Talmud, Reb Velvel's top Talmud. Baruch Shekivanti, I told you this more than once, I said in class that it's just amazing, the Brisker Rav's top Talmud, he got lost in America. You think Rakefet said it? Then I read the biography of the Brisker Rav. A group of American rabbis visited him, and I know exactly who. Rabbi Hollander was part of them. It was the early 50s, and the Brisker Rav went hysterical. My best Talmud is Vashfunden geworden, as Eich in America. My greatest Talmud has gotten lost in America. Who heard of Rav Noach Bornstein? Rav Noach, all right, he was a wonderful Rebbe. I loved him. And wonderful Rebbe. There was a Ben Bayit in his house. And was so one weekend, I was a kid. I didn't understand yet what I know today, the differences between. I was very naive. I was a kid. Libi chashka b'Torah. So one weekend, I went to Lubavitch. Lubavitch was just getting started. It's the early 50s. And I came in Sunday morning, and I told Reb Noach, Rebbe, you should know. I'm living it in Yiddish, but I'll say it in English. Rebbe, you should know. I was at Lubavitch, and if I had told him I had gone to a Buddhist temple, I think he would be happier. You have no idea the way he reacted, and I couldn't understand it. But you see, if you dismiss the Kabbalah, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and the Zohar, you wind up. And by the way, this was Rav Shaul Lieberman. Remember my lectures on JTS? And I thought Rav Shaul Lieberman and Professor Heschel. Professor Lieberman, in his eyes, Professor Heschel is an Amoritz. An Amoritz. What does he know? Kabbalah, Hasidus. Lieberman was Kulo Shasim Paiskim. Anything else was an Arishkeit. And he once made the statement that an Arishkeit is thus. But then people become very famous writing about the history of the Arishkeit. I think he was referring to some of the professors at Hebrew U. But it's two different words. By the way, the Rav, I have to tell you, was not like this. The Rav quoted Tanya, quoted Likutei Torah, something from the Zohar. Did the Rav live with Kabbalistic reality? I doubt it. I can't conceive of the Rav writing an amulet or something to that effect. But he had Derech Eretz in the sense that there was tradition in it. But remember, the Rav was a product of his youth. The Rav's formative years were in Chaslovich. People told me they heard the Rav at Mincha saying Sim Shalom, not Shalom Rav. And they went over to Rebbe, and it must be in the 70s, 80s, and they said, Rebbe, what's with you? He said, what are you looking at me? I grew up in Chaslovich. That's all, everyone said it. So he's not Professor Liebman. Professor Liebman grew up in a Litvish world, the Chazon Ish's first cousin, not a small matter. Their mothers were sisters. So this is the Noda B'Yehuda. He says, all right, you have to learn Musa, but not the Kabbalistic overtones that you will find at times in even the most famous Musa Sparim. Then he says something else, all part of the tshuva, Tikkun Chatzot. Now, how many of us say Tikkun Chatzot? And to get up the middle of the night, and then he says, and I mean, this is just amazing to me. However, who adam chalash umatmid b'torah. So he's worried about too many fast days for him. Calls him a weak man. I don't know how weak he was if he commanded it with his wife and with his mother-in-law. Ribbono shel Olam, I don't know. Maybe I don't want to go further. But to me, you're not so weak if you can play around with so many women at once. And lo aleinu. And he says that since he's weak, he shouldn't fast too much in the summer days when there's tremendous heat. Only Erev Rosh Chodesh. Again, notice that Erev Rosh Chodesh, which becomes very big up in Kabbalah. In old Rivka, they say what a Yom Kippur Katan. You follow? And their other Balabatim are furious. Where does Yom Kippur Katan come to old Rivka? Or is an Ashkenaz Groh, etc., etc.? And others say, no, that the Groh too was involved in Kabbalah. All I can tell you is, I never daven mincha erev Yom Kippur in Beit Knesset Ohel Rivka, either in Ohel Aaron or before Corona. I used to go to Yad Tamar. There, Baruch Hashem, Hasidic overtones, no fasting and no Yud Gimel Midot and all that goes into Yom Kippur Katan. But he says even in Tammuz, he has to fast erev Rosh Chodesh. And the rest of the summer, one day a week, Chodesh Elul, at least two or three times in accordance with the strength, and Aseret Yemei Tshuva every day. You only eat at night. In the winter, then already he should fast 3 days a week, and one of the 3 days should be total day and night, like Yom Kippur, like Tisha B'Av. And he says, Tikkun Chatzot, remaining awake till the morning, saying to Hillim, he says, this is the greatest tshuva in the world. So you see, willy-nilly, to use the word the Rav taught me, let me say it, B'shem Omro, willy-nilly, even the Noda B'Yehuda had to give him a Tshuvat HaMishkal. He couldn't let him go without anything, without nothing, just telling him, just say, Slach Lanu Avinu Ki Chatanu M'Chalanu Ki Fashanu. I don't know. In modern times, if someone came to me with a shaila like this, I mean a real Baal Tshuva, and a decent person, I wouldn't stress the fasting. I would stress. I once had a shaila like this. Someone made a mistake, and I told them, "You have to learn Yoredeya. That's what you have to do. You did Tshuva. It was b'shoigeg, whatever." But to me, I would point them to learning. The Lubavitcher Rebbe would probably take into consideration who the person is. If you can point them to learning, you point them to learning. But outreach, doing good, tzedakah, what a person can accomplish, what Baruch Hashem, the miracles of life, helping someone downtrodden, helping someone come close to Yiddishkeit, saving a marriage, children, parents-children relationship. There's so much good that we can do. Again, it has to do with the person's ability, with the person's degree, what he was trained to do. A medical doctor with a good bedside manner, you know that it's just as important as the medicine to be decent, to be chizuk. In Israel, sometimes you have the problem that doctors look at the x-rays and look at your medical history, but they never look at the human being. And it's very, very important. And that too, encourage, bring light to the world. All right, but this is the Noda B'Yehuda, and this is what Reb Menashe Klein quotes, and it is a very powerful Noda B'Yehuda. Now, then we come to Reb Menashe Klein, can you make a siyum, can't you make a siyum? And here's the sentence that Jack asked me, what does he mean? V'hine b'yemet b'davazeh oylim oma, oylim lo oma. It's bad if I say, bad if I don't say. And what does he mean by this? I think what we have here is Reb Menashe Klein is living in a different world. A YU person can be honest, at least in my time. You could be exposed to Bernard Revel Graduate School, you could be exposed to other types of thought, and you can handle it honestly, and you can speak out, and you can criticize if you feel it's constructive, etc. Reb Menashe Klein, what's he going to do? He's going to come out and say the Sifrei Musar are not good, they're mistakes, and again, what's he referring to? And here I think Reb Menashe Klein, you're not just referring to the Svarim of the Hasidei Ashkenaz. At the time of the Vilna Gaon, there already was Haskalah. Part of the Haskalah were Jews who were frum, but they wanted the people to be enlightened. They wanted the people to improve their culture, their. Let me give you a simple example, savoir faire. Let me tell you a true story. One of the saddest stories ever. I told the story maybe 10 years ago when we were first beginning the history of Torah in the United States. One of the greatest attempts to bring Torah to America was when they brought over Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, RJJ. RJJ was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Israel Solanta. He was the Magid Meshurim of Vilna. He was a fabulous speaker. You bring him to America. Well, you just think for 1 minute. In America, hundreds of thousands of East European Jews are there already by the 1880s. And their greatest dream is to assimilate, to become Americans. It's not that they want to throw religion away. That happened willy-nilly because once you become Americanized and there's reform and conservative and this is modern and so a generation later you're throwing it away. But the original people, they wanted to be Americanized, but they wanted to retain, they wanted Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. Now, here's Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, his native language, and perhaps the only language he could speak in fluently, Yiddish. Comes to the east side, and this is a true story, in the Beis Medrash HaGadol on Norfolk Street, he's giving a drasha. The place is mobbed. And we have, how do I know all this? I wasn't there. But we have memoir literature, people who were there. And he wanted to show how he realizes this is America, and he uses the word, instead of clean, rain, he uses the word clean, to show he knows English. He knows at least, he knows one word in English at least, et nicht gesagt rain, nor clean. And the audience was impressed. And then a few minutes later, he has to blow his nose. So how did you blow your nose in Europe? They had large pieces of a rag, and you took it out, and you blew, and you rolled it up a little, and put it back in, and you blew, and rag, and old, and rag, and say. And in front of this Americanized audience that was already using sophisticated handkerchiefs, that you use one or two, and then you have two handkerchiefs in your pocket. You remember a handkerchief, Yomo? I still have maybe 30 handkerchiefs. They're the only use I have for the handkerchiefs when I'm a Sada Kedushin with the Baruch Hashem, Yerayeka. I was a Sada Kedushin, so the Ketuva, I need the handkerchief. So the people were laughing so when they saw the Yerupeish handkerchief, and it ruined the whole drasha. They walked out laughing. So you see, there were so-called Sifrei Musa. You can check this out. I can tell you, if you read Mendelssohn, Moses Mendelssohn, Altman's work, you'll see some of his followers put out what they called Sifrei Musa. It could be that this is what Reb Menashe Klein is referring to. So he says, you know, either way I'm going to lose. If I maledict the Sifrei Musa, everyone will take for granted, throw away every last Don Musa Sefer. If I don't call your attention to the fact that the Noda B'Yehuda was right, there are some Musa Sfarim, Shem Mitachat L'Kol Bikoret, to use modern Hebrew, then I'm not being honest. I don't know what to do. Should I say? Should I not say? And he says that Sifrei Musa v'hem Sfarot Krei Siyot, that there are Sifrei Musa that are stomach Sfarot, what I spelled to refer. It's not from your brain, it's from your stomach. And he says, Bekama Pamim Negative Rei Chazal. And at times you'll find something against Chazal, against our tradition. And this, by the way, you'll find all the way back in Sefer Sifrei Ashkenaz, the Hasidei Ashkenaz, you'll see with Reb Moshe when I'll get to it. But certainly in modern times, you will find words, concepts, hefech mimasha katuv b'shas u'poskim. And he says, such Sifrei Musa, obviously, you cannot make a siyum on. And if the Noda B'Yehuda complained already in his generation that you had such Sifrei Musa, lo kein darenu hashafel sheyarad ployim shekreisenu keres chamorim v'lo kechamor shel Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. And again, what he's referring to is the famous Gemara that we're not malachim, we're b'nei tamuta, and if we're not even b'nei tamuta, we're chamorim, and we're not even like the chamor of Prince Neil, who didn't eat something versus nisht abgemaisit, something that was tevel. And he says, in our generation, we certainly have sfarim like this. So I'm very hesitant to say you can make a siyum. And he says, but there are Sifrei Musa that certainly you can make a siyum on. And of course, here he tells a story with the Gra, and this story makes me very happy, because my dear students across the world, I'm the only one in the room once again without a beard. And this story makes me very happy, and I cannot tell you. The only moment of joy I had on Friday was my ability to shave. Outside of that, hab given a gebrochene mensch Friday. But thank God I could shave. I have to retract what I just said. Ellie Weinstein has walked in, and his wife evidently told him, go back to looking as a youngster or you're in trouble. And since he knows HaKol Acharei HaIsha, he looks Ellie. I don't teach anyone under 29 years of age. You look like you're 19, 9 years old. Wow. So he says that you have Sifrei Musa like Mesilat Yesharim. And you all know that the Gaon said, the Gaon Mivilna, that if he could see the author of the Mesilat Yesharim, Hayaholech Baraglo Lekapel Panav, he would walk as many miles as he had to walk to see his holy face. And you all know, and by the way, we'll come to this in a tshuva of the Chatam Sofer, if not this week, next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, the Baal Mesilat Yesharim used an Orelko daily. The great Rabbanim in Italy were all clean shaven, and believe it or not, Al Pi Kabbalah. They found sources Al Pi Kabbalah that they were all clean shaven. Unbelievable. So I love that. I love that. The Gaon would have walked to meet. So if anyone has any complaint that Rakefet is clean shaven, I will send him to this source and tell him the next sentence from Moshe Klein. His Hebrew at times is poetic. V'lo hanigunim heinigim echad ele yesh v'yesh. And he says so beautifully, it's like we use the halachic expression, the rivers and rivers separate, they go different ways. He says beautifully, not all the nigunim are exactly the same. Yesh v'yesh. And this is with the Sifrei Musa, you have to choose intelligently which sefer, and there's no question that you can make a siyum lekavod uletiferet if it is a Masil Tisharim, a Chovat HaLevavot, a Nachat Tzadikim. And this takes me back to the way I began the lecture last week, Lakewood, Reb Aaron Cutler, and I still live it there. Moments there, you see, I was a young kid, very, very impressionable. My soul was seeking. And Reb Aaron Cutler, nishta kleinigkeit, not a small matter. And this kid, I was on Tisha B'Av, and this young man, an Americana, Reb Aaron had nachat. I'm not going to tell you what Reb Aaron said about me and what he said to the Mashgiach, and my whole life might have been very, very different. But all right, I can't complain. I wound up Baruch Hashem, I hope, with Yirat Shemayim and Avat HaTorah. But Reb Aaron loved an American kid whose heart was filled for Torah, wanted Torah, etc. So this kid goes out to Reb Aaron, and he says, during the 9 days, on Tisha B'Av, can you learn a sefer of Musa? And Reb Aaron said to him, Kol ha-ma'aber ha-reza meshubach. But I guarantee you, Reb Aaron, the only sifrei Musa he knew, Chovat HaLevava, Tochat Tzadikim, these are the legitimate sifrei ha-Musa. Sharei Tshuva, Hilchat Tshuva of the Rambam. Alright, Reb Menashe Kleiner, he talks about the Gaon's period, and Og Behuda already may be referring to Tshuva Tamishkal, to Hasidei Ashkenaz. Alright, then, so you see, Jack, Reb Menashe Klein did give an answer, but he's aware that he doesn't want to maledict Sefrei Musa, because it could be in Borough Park. It's not fashionable to maledict Sifrei Musa. Believe me, if Reb Noach Bornstein would say what's on his mind, I don't think he would get away with it in Borough Park. But in the Bronx, you could get away with it. It was a different niggun in the Bronx, we'll put it that way. Okay. Then Reb Menashe Klein quotes a beautiful Gemara, and the Shabbat Taf Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph, and it continues on Lamed Aleph Amid Bet. And I'll quote the Gemara to you, and there you see the Gemara, you see what the heart of the Gemara is saying is, all of Yiddishkeit depends upon Yirat Shemayim. Without Yirat Shemayim, the whole Yiddishkeit is worthless. And you understand, I'll give you an example how this question comes up. Tell me, can a guy learn Gemara? Can a guy know Gemara? Can a guy understand Gemara? And you had, let's say, Professor Albright, if I'm not mistaken, in Baltimore. He was an Adam Gottel in learning, they say. Yeshiva boys would go to him for Pshat and Gemara. But what was lacking was the Yirat Shemayim, which a guy, a non-Jew, can't have. It's, he can be a fine individual and fear God in his sense, but not in the totality of the Jewish experience. It's like the Gemara with the Roman Emperor and the Chalant. And he loves it, but when he makes it, it doesn't come out the same way, because you're missing the Shabbat feeling. It's looking to the davening, what we say Shabbat morning, you're seeing the Shmon Esrei. And Rav Shmuel Vosner says a word, as I told you, I'm reading his biography now, I'm almost finished at the very tail end. And I have to say, many things I enjoyed. One part of the biography, I'm still shaking. I can't believe what I read. I'll tell it to you in a second. Might as well share it with you. But the Rav Shmuel Vosner says so beautifully that a guy can be a lamdan, he can be a Talmud Chacham, but he'll never be a yeshiva person. And what's the difference? When we learn, we break into a niggun. He says, I never yet saw a guy break into a niggun. And it could very well be in Vienna that Gentiles came to him. There were learned people. There was a university there. Could be they came to him. Could be some of them knew how to learn a Gemara. But they never break into a niggun. Just in parentheses, I'll tell you what shocked me just before I do the Gemara. What shocked me was very simple. Towards the end, they're trying to portray the greatness of Rav Wisner and how he continued the tradition and wouldn't allow any changes. And the story is told of a Talmud of his from London who bought two tickets to visit Israel to bring his son to Israel as a bar mitzvah gift. And Rav Wisner wrote back to him not to come. That, you know what it means to take a 12-year-old boy on a plane and the airport and the sights he will see. And the man wrote back to Rav Wisner, but I already paid for the tickets, they're non-refundable. Rav Wisner said, nevertheless, and a beautiful story how the man made a collage, maybe Rav Wisner's picture with the two tickets and beautiful frame, and gave it to the kid a gift. All I can tell you is that story goes 1,000,000,000,000,000,000% against the Torah I received from my Rebbeim. Ribbono shel Olam, sites are all over the world. What, in London, everyone walks around sneer-stick? Everyone is a tzaddikid in London? I don't know. Yeah, Reb Moshe has the famous tshuva on the... The airports in Europe, I don't know. Reb Moshe has the old tshuva going on to a train. You know, there's a reality to life. A person has to know how to overcome all these sights and temptations. We don't live in an igloo. But that's the Torah I received. Okay? Could be. I don't argue with Yomo, because Yomo, I spoke about you before. Do you have to bench Goimel? Have you asked the Shaila? Because you feel you weren't right there at that moment. You were 2 minutes away. I don't know. It's very frightening. Very, very frightening. But I don't argue with Yomo, but we bind a shalom to tell a kid not to come to Israel, not to go to the Kotel, put on tefillin the first time, not to go to B'nai Brak, not to go to Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, not to see Rav Shmuel Vosner.
Who says that?
What do you mean? He told
the... These things that Reverend listening up, who said that?
I'm saying it.
Rav
Wisner told him not to come. Yeah. Stay home.
He said not to go through the airport where he'll be exposed to...
Say he's going to come, you're almost going to arrange a boat that's going to leave from Golders Green or Stamford Hill. Yomo, wake up and live in the real world. There's no boat from Stamford Hill to Yerushalayim. But wow, I couldn't get over that. And that, it's not just... I don't believe Rav Shmuel, I can't even believe the story is true, but that someone should publish it, it shows you the Fadorfenkeit that this Talmud thinks he's praising the Rebbe with a story like this. He cost the guy 500 sterling wasted on tickets. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I would have taken a picture of the kid at the Kotel, the Kedusha Vitara. I would have taken a picture of him with Rav Shmuel Vosna. Wow. When I look at that picture sitting next at the Rav, that picture doesn't leave me. I'm right here now. The Rav is here. Back to the Gemara. Shabbos Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. I may be all wrong. You're entitled to your own niggun. But boy, I was floored by that. No one should come to Israel. Stay at home. The sites are better in Borough Park. I got news for you. God, God's all up here. In Borough Park, the Arabs are now moving to Borough Park because it's more tznius. Are you aware of that?
Yeah.
Okay. Baruch Hashem, you're almost aware of it.
And
in the meantime, this morning there was a terrorist attack at Gush Etzion again. Right there at the... Thank God they got the a woman. There's no more details, but no one was injured. They blew her away. I don't know if they killed her or just injured her, etc. So I wouldn't be somach on the Arabs, and let's get back here. Oh, my Rabbi, my Rabbi, who know, call it down, Yishpah, Torein, Bo, Yered, Shemayim, Domo, Le, Gizbash, Mas, Maf, Teichet, Apim, Liyad, Umaf, Teichet, Achit, Son, Liyad, Lomas, Rulo, Bahai, Ayal. And what a beautiful Gemara. Someone that has knowledge, but doesn't have Yered Shemayim, it's like you have the inner key, but you don't have the outer key. How do you get in? Well, if we don't deny. We've seen people, lo aleinu, remember of Shmuel Atlas? You know how much has been written? The fact that the Sri Deyesh corresponding, you know, Rav Shmuel Atlas was Professor Atlas. His father was a chant from the Gedolim of Europe, the Shalvele. He was a big Rav. His grandfather, one of the founders of Tel's Yeshiva, and Rav Shmuel Atlas was a Nilui in Slabotka. And then he wound up in America, Hebrew Union College. Remember I showed you, and he paskin la halacha, you don't need a get if you have a civil divorce. Dina de malchut de dina. All right? And how much has been written, the Sri Deyesh retained the friendship with him. And you see, we'll get to a shaila. Are you allowed to use? He came out with an edited edition of one of Rishon and Bab Metzia, if I'm not mistaken. Are you allowed to use? I think it's the Rabbad, the Raivin and Bab Metzia. Are you allowed to use it? Kitveyad, Kitavyad. But that's a classic example. The man, his learning, fabulous. Yered Shemayim, hard to believe what happened to him. So, without Yered Shemayim, what good is the learning? You have the inner key. It's a Litvisha approach. Learning is very important. But you don't have the other key. How are you going to get in? Amar Rabbi Yehuda lo bar kadosh baruch hu tolma lal kedei shirum lefanav shenema velokim asa sheyirum lefanav. Man was just created for one reason, to fear God. And then the Gemara, beautiful story. The Gemara tells these stories are magnificent. Rav Simcha Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yatvei, that two talmid chachamim, two amoraim, were sitting. The Azel Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha, and Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha came along. So one said to the other, stand up, because this man fears sin. The other one said, stand up, because he's a Talmud Chacham. And the other one responded, you're praising him because he's a Talmud Chacham? Nah. Fearing sin. Yirat Shemayim. Yirat HaChet is infinitely more important than being a Talmud Chacham. I'm standing up because of the Yirat Shemayim. And interesting machlokes. Which is more important? But ultimately, if you don't have the Yirat Shamayim, what good is the learning? And this is the way Rabbi Menashe Klein ends the tshuva, quoting this Gemara. And look into Rabbi Menashe Klein. He says, when this one says he's a Talmud Chacham, he says, you're putting him down. He, of course he's a Talmud, but that's not what's important. It's a Yirei Shamayim. That's what's important. And he says, these type of Sifrei Musa, Vadei Beklal Sifrei Kodesh Heim, and Gam Hanodu B'Yehuda, Lo Katav Alahanei, Shabonim Al Sfarot Kreisiyot, Avol Sifrei Musa HaBenuyot Al Divrei Chazal, Heim Kodesh Meleim Yirat Hashem V'Yavato, the Reshit Chachma Yirat Hashem. And that's what Rabbi Menashe Klein paskins. And I have to say, it's a very fascinating tshuva. You can spend a year, if you go deeper and dig and try to come out with examples from Hasidei Ashkenaz and from people who lived at the Gaon's time, which is the start already of Haskalah. Very fascinating to see the material, the Sfarot, and what they're talking about and what they're trying to accomplish. But when Yirat Hashem is not the basis, you ultimately fall by the wayside. Now, coming back to what I mentioned, Rabbi Hillel Yaakov Weinberg and Rabbi Shmuel Atlas, a great deal has been written about the fact that they continued to correspond. My Talmud, who did his doctorate, Rabbi Hillel Yaakov Weinberg at Harvard, the last doctorate done under Professor Tversky, Mark Shapiro, Rabbi Dr. Professor Mark Shapiro, he written, Rabbi J.J. Schachler has written a great deal in Torah Mada Journal, Dr. Professor Judith Bleich, who just came out with a book, also deals with it. But I'll tell you, I just want to add my own thought. You see, these people who go back to their childhood together, it's very hard for them to realize and recognize and accept that someone could change so much. To Rabbi Hillel Yaakov Weinberg, Shmuel Atlas was still Haben Yakiri Li Ephraim. Yelet Shashua, Midei Davri Bo Sachasker, and older Rachamenu, I'm paraphrasing the Pasuk. It's a powerful Pasuk. And we plead with God, remember us as sinless youngsters. Have mercy upon us. There's a lot to this thought. Very hard for Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg to suddenly have to recognize how far off the past his own chaver from youth has gone. That's number one. Number two, it could very well be that in back of Rabbi Hillel Yaakov Weinberg's mind was keep the channels of communication open. Don't give up on someone as long as they're alive. You never know what's going to happen. And it could be he felt that keeping up this correspondence, there still was a bridge that might become a two-way bridge, bringing Reb Shmuel back. So I wouldn't take this as a proof. See, some people are critical. Why did he deal with this apikoros? Other people are critical. Why didn't he recognize the reality? But I think you have to realize we're all human beings. And there are many factors that go into being a human being. And I can be melamed zchut. On one hand, a childhood friend. On another hand, you never can tell the two-way bridge. B'didi haviyuvda, I've had some students who are very brilliant, but have gone off the path. So you should know, one of them, I've been in touch with, I corresponded with. She promised me an answer. My wife wrote to her. I never got the answer beyond that. And I think she's chayshish that my whole correspondence was to bring her back. And I felt very bad because the correspondence was on one level. We once had a beautiful relationship. She was a very bright student. And on the other level, I can't say I would be upset if she came back. I would be overjoyed. But the correspondence deserved an answer on its own merits. But I understand her. She's bright, super bright. She figured out the Rebbe wants to bring me back. It's not that she's angry at me. No, she... But she's rebelled, and from a very... I don't want to mention who her parents were, who her father was, her siblings. But I understand it, and I'm a lamed zchut on Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg. Okay. Let me introduce the next question that will trouble us. And I'll give you the source in Reb Menashe Klein, but we'll skip over him right now and go to Reb Moshe, and then we'll come back. Chelek Yud, Mishnah Halachot, Siman Kuf Tet Vav. And here's a shayla that Reb Moshe dealt with in... was a big storm in his first volume on Yoredeya. This is the second volume Reb Moshe put out. Sefer Igrot Moshe, Yoredeya, Siman Pei Aleph. And I'll tell you what the question is. Look, following World War II, endless immigrants arrived in New York. Among them were many Rabbanim, many Lamdanim, Rosh Yeshiva, etc. How do you dress? In America, I grew up, everyone dressed what's called kurtze kleider. We wore jackets that were... short jackets, I don't know if they're short, these were the jackets, but compared to the begadim they wore in Europe, they were considered short. The Rav, you should know, for his first years in Boston through the 30s, was very makpid Shabbos, because the Rambam is Madaik and Lashon, is based upon the Gemara in Shabbos, that you changed clothes, you wore different clothes Shabbos. The what's pshat different clothes, that not just clean clothes. I wear blue pants Shabbos, a white shirt. If I wear a white shirt during the week, I remember my grandchildren, now it would be great-grandchildren, used to ask me, it's not Shabbat, not Yontif, why the white shirt? That's my vote on the right wear, right, the yeshiva shevelt where everyone wears a uniform, so-called. So how do you change for Shabbos? Where's the difference? The Rambam. All right? It's an interesting question. Tell me. Prince Albert, they say. There are pictures of it. Yeah. Prince Albert. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Olam she'hakol nehyeh v'dvaro. What about if in Europe you wore long clothes, Siddish clothes? You look at pictures of Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. Every student there is in a what we would call a bekesha. Look at pictures of Slabotka. Everyone is in modern clothes, clean shaven. It was all part of the concept of Gadlut Adam. That led to the great tragedy here, which was even more than Lo Aleinu. I think it was 56, 57, killed 58, something in the late high 50s. In Hebron. How did Yeshiva Slabotka wind up in Hebron? Of because they were advised, don't come to Yerushalayim. The crowd here will consider you up because of clean shaven, modern clothes. Why did they go to Hebron? Because Hebron was a Chabad, the Chabad city, the Rav was a Chabadnik. It was an enikel of the Alter Rebbe. And Slonim. And the city had a contingent of Chabadnikim. Chabadnikim were more open. They could accept, this is Hebron, this is Slobodka, this is Litvish. Well, all these people come to America. You have clothes versus clothes versus clothes. How does a Lubavitch dress? How does a Satma dress? How does a Gera dress? Are we obligated to wear the same clothes we wore in Europe? And I need not tell you on this topic, there is endless, endless material. I'll cite to you. We'll end off the class, a basic citation, boom. Pick up Rav Moshe, we'll pick up the Chatam Sofer next week. Yoredeya Siman Kuf Ayin Chet. Sif Katan Aleph. Ein Cholchin Bechukat Ha'Odei Kachavim. Velo Medabin Lehem. V'lo yilbash malbush hamiyuchad lachem. And here you have it. We're not allowed to look like Gentiles, emulate Gentiles. I mean, you've all learned this, Gemaras and Yumi, and you have various places in Shas, the haircuts, the etc. Avodah Zarah, the whole Gemara. We're not allowed to look like them, live like them, and we're not allowed to dress if it's something miyuchad lachem. Yomo, can you close the door? Now, what does it mean? What does it mean miyuchad lachem? And I have to tell you, these words in the Shulchan Aruch are the heart of understanding the issue. And here, I learned with the Rav, we hit upon the sugya in Sanhedrin, clothes, shoes, color, the Kiddush Hashem, yesterday, Sedra, when do you have to give your life? I saw Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, I lectured on this extensively when I dealt with the Holocaust. And I just want to stress, Lo yilbash malbush hamiyuchad lachem. And here you come to a very basic concept. If something is universal, there's nothing wrong with it. We are human beings. As human beings, we are no different than any other human being in the world. You know, you define yourself. I'm a human being. I'm a Jew. I'm an Israeli. In that order. In that order, basically. If it's something miyuchad lahem, then the question comes up. Are we allowed? We're Jews. We're not goyim. If it's universal, it's fine. If it's not universal, we have to analyze what it's about. Does it serve a purpose? Is it proper? Is it modest? It's a world of material. And I'll end off the class and just show you the state of Israel, one of its reflections in Halacha. Machloket, Rabbi Tzal Zolti, who was he? Norm, chief rabbi of Jerusalem. Good friend of a guy named Rakefet. How was he my good friend? Also an interesting story. In 1970, 1969-70, a Jew returned from America, and from a good Tzioni Dati Haredi home, and he introduced Rehov Adron, a conservative synagogue, mixed seating. I, walking home from the Kotel on Rosh Hashanah, I opened the door, I looked in, I couldn't believe my eyes. I knew this Jew. He taught at YU in my time. My time there. The next year, Rav Zsolti was now chief rabbi, and he published an Isur, it is forbidden to daven where there is mixed seating. Well, he was ripped apart by the Jerusalem Post, the Palestinian Post, pardon me. Oh, they went crazy. He's a fanatic. So an Olech Hadash by the name of Rothkopf wrote a letter to the editor. Why are they finding fault with Rabbi Zsolti? And I quoted Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, where he paskened for his brother-in-law that he should stay home and not hear shofar because he will not be yotzei in a conservative temple. I think it actually was an Orthodox shul that had turned conservative that year. Well, Rav Zsolti sent for me. I found out later that in Israel, lo aleinu, I was told in Israel, no one does anything l'shem shamayim. You did this for Rav Zsolti. It's either you're being paid off or you have political interest. I couldn't get off. Anyway, I went in to see Rav Zsolti and we became very good friends. He lived a block away from me. He was married to an American woman from Chicago, etc., etc. And he had a certain broadness. Well, Rav Zsolti came out with an Issa. You can see it. You can check it out in one of his svarim. A military funeral, lo aleinu. Tell me, have you ever been to a military funeral? What happens at a military funeral in Russia, in the Ukraine, in the United States, in Britain, in Canada? There is a salute of guns. Have you ever seen that? They shoot into the air. I don't know what goes on. And they do it here at every military. We should never have a military funeral again unless you request not to do it. Is that allowed? Rav Zsolti Asit. Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, I quote him, he frees Yotemidai, Yudidi, Rabbi Tzal Zsolti. Rabbi Tzal Zsolti was too machmir. A military funeral, absolutely permissible. What's the key word, Norm? Universal. It's nothing to do with Avodah Zarah, nothing to do, this is not a statement, only Goyim are buried this way. Universal. Universal. Mark, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, how many gun salute? What is it called at a military funeral? You'll tell me afterwards.
21
So it's 21 all over. What do they do when the queen goes by and they give cover to the queen? Also, I think a 21 gun salute. Ah, so I'm right. I was thinking in my head 21, but then I thought maybe I'm confusing it with royalty, with a royal wedding, with a royal this, with a royal funeral. They just shot guns at the prince's funeral. Rabbi Shal Zsolti asses, and Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg is matia, and he says he frees al amidah. It's universal. I have to tell you, I heard these exact words from the Rav in class, not about a military funeral, but when it's universal, it's muta. If it's limited to Goyim, then already we have a question. Ad kan hayom. Yes, Norm.
When my father's son passed away, at the funeral, the American war veterans, Jewish war veterans, had a flag on the coffin and had the flag holding the ceremony.
Uh-huh.
And many people said that they wish they would have done that for their parents who served in the wars as well.
Well, I'm saying, so why was your phone? He served in World War II.
Uh-huh.
So they had a flag on the
plane. So that was universal, but that was something that people did.
To honor someone who had served in the army, had been a veteran. All right, it's a fascinating topic that affects every last one of us in this class, because no one here is wearing specifically Jewish clothes. I'm wearing a shirt like this. As a matter of fact, no one here is wearing a white shirt altogether. Is Yomo that white or is that yellow?
White,
that's white. Okay, Yomo has a white shirt on. Everyone else is dressed in the latest fashion, Baruch Hashem. Maybe our kippot are Jewish. But even there, we're fashionable kippot. Each one here is identified by his kippah, kippah sruga, a rabarala kippah, a breslava kippah. Everyone, I guess. What do you have? You have. That's a chapelle kippah? What is that called?
I don't know.
That kippah, we can't even identify. It's got holes in it, too. You breathe through the kippah.
Shul on Shabbos, I wear a hat. Okay? But I put on a straw hat on Pesach, not on Memorial Day. Because Chodesh Aviv is when I put on my straw hat, not Memorial Day.
So you see, Benjamin, you can be Samach on his hat, Baruch Hashem, a gate with lumdas with the straw hat. Where I came from, if you wore a straw hat before Memorial Day, they threw you out there, say, get out of here, you lack of savoir faire, lack of derech eretz. All right, my dear students, let me reiterate, I'm ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that I was able to teach and able to smile a little. It's a very difficult day. So what did we do today? First of all, we began the day with the Nyan of the Yoma, and it's still too early to be maspid, misha make mutalafun of, but it's just an overwhelming tragedy. We have to go further. Positive, not they're going to find complaints with this one and that one and the Haredi politicians. Forget it all. The government has to step in, take over the whole area, rebuild it and rebuild it properly, and then put crowd limits in the future. If we're going to have crowds coming, you have to have tickets in advance. It has to be limited. We could defeat Corona, Ribbono Shel Olam, and we can't kill ourselves in these. We still don't have a clear picture what happened. I heard so many different takes on it. Were you there, Ali? Were you there? You were also. Is it Yapta Ben Shkoymel? Who else was there from the Kailel?
I wasn't there.
What?
I was not there. Noah and Matthew.
Noah and Matthew. And all of Torah Tzraka was there, only part. How many buses did you have?
Two buses.
And you went on the buses too? Were you?
I didn't go on the bus.
You went on the buses too?
I was supposed to go with them on the way back.
But what? Right. Well, he was. So, how did you get back?
We found a bus to Beit Shemesh at like after 7 a.m.
Oh my God! Thank God you're alive. God, it's just frightening. The kids, the families, the brothers. Okay. So we spoke in the end of the omen. I spoke about why you. I'm just. It's devastating because lawyers tell me there's no solution with the, and the hatred that they have for why you want to be a lesbian, want to be, I'll tell you, if anyone says I love the lesbians, I'm going to smack their face, plain and simple. Anyone can do what they want privately. The public thoroughfare has to represent Torah Hashem Tamima. That's how we survived so many thousands of years, and it's the only way we can go further and perpetuate. And all right, you're a Machalo Shabbos. You're proud of it? I'm going to say I love... No, absolutely not. I respect your freedom of choice, but please don't come into the public thoroughfare. And I have news for you. I've done a lot of research on this topic. You can't teach Torah for 62 years and not come up against problems of homosexuality. And my research tells me 90% of the people who claim they're whatever the word is, queer, lesbian, homo, etc., 90% it's social. It's not inborn. Inborn research on humans and animals, it's under 2% that are actually inborn with this challenge. But today, once you accept it and make it acceptable, normative, then of course you have people. Why should I learn how to get along with a woman? Why should I learn how to get along with a man? God's so up it and what we've done to the Jewish race and the human race. Okay, then we finished out the tshuva of the Musa Sefer and the Noda B'Yehuda and the Shevet Levi and Rav Fisher. I think there are three Fisher brothers. Each one was an Adam Gadol. I don't know who's alive anymore, but it's just amazing. Three brothers, and one was a Dayan in the Eidah Charedit, one for Agudat Yisrael, and one for the government, for the regular Batei Dinim. And we introduced the whole question of dress. It's a very fascinating topic. I'm going to show you the Chatam Sofer, a very, very important Chatam Sofer. Reb Moshe quotes it. And then we'll go into Reb Menashe Klein and deal with this question. Okay, I also want to mention Chaim Goldberg, who had studied in the Kollel a year or two ago. So I want you to know he republished his father's book, Rabbi Dr. Hillel Goldberg, Between Berlin and Slabodka. It's a classic volume. I've quoted it quite often. And Chaim has republished it. If anyone wants to purchase it, you have to contact him. And it's very simple. Chaim, Chaim, 678. @gmail.com. I repeat, chaim678@gmail.com. This has to do with Israel. It could be in America. It's available in the bookstores. I also want to mention in Yonah Diyoma, David Eliezri, Rabbi Eliezri. This is a Chabadnik from Orange County, California. Very top individual. He's on the Board of Governors of the Jewish Agency as well. I think he's the first Chabadnik ever to achieve that. There, he's published fabulous Svarim on Chabad. Anyway, he wrote an article which appeared in the Jewish Post, Jerusalem Post, on the April 22nd on the tough conversion, a different view on conversion debate. And I absolutely recommend this article to everyone. It deals with the whole question of explaining why Torah Jews cannot accept the conversion, which is not proper. And when you go yelling and shouting pluralism and fighting the rabbinate, you are hurting the people, because ultimately they're going to come along and they're going to find out that the core of the Jewish people do not accept a non-proper conversion. It's a very beautiful article and very real, very beautifully written. It's not power or politics. It's about the core beliefs and teachings of Judaism. I also want to call your attention, an article appeared by my Talmud, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg of the famous Boca Raton Synagogue. I am not a modern Orthodox rabbi, and I think you hear an echo of yours truly in this beautiful article, but he quotes what I think I also quoted in class, Rabbi Asher Weiss, where Rabbi Asher Weiss says, you know, an ideal Jew learning like a Litvak, Chassidus, the piety, the emotion, the Derech Eretz of the German, the organization of the German, the savoir faire of the Hungarian. If we can put it all together, we have the greatest Jew. Are there any questions here?
Yeah, that article. Isn't that what it means to be modern Orthodox? Like, what is modern Orthodox?
I don't like the word modern Orthodox because it implies that my religion has to be modernized. And I always use the word, I'm a Torah Jew in the Western world. And
it's not as a misleading article. Yeah, I like those points, but at the end of the day, like, that's what it means to be a part of an Orthodox community, that we're not afraid to learn Sfas Emes, we're not afraid to learn from...
Not so Rav Asher Weiss could be. He's... You're criticizing my definition that I don't like to be called modern Orthodox. All right, fine. You can. We don't have to even argue about it. It's my point is a legitimate point. The word modernity means I have to be like Chovevei Torah. I have to boast that we now have achieved women rabbis. That's what bothers me. I have no problem with my Torah. Yes, I'm different than Meir Shearim, I'm different than a good deal of the Torah world, because certainly in Israel, you must give a child a core curriculum. We live in a reality, a person has to make a living. In Israel, we have an army. If not for the army, we couldn't sit here today, plain and simple. There was an attack now in Gush Etzion. Let's find out what happened. I think it's the army who shot and killed or stopped this terrorist from killing us. Without an army, we wouldn't be here. How do you not serve in the army? Milchemet mitzvah. All right, there's a lot to be said. But I am a Torah Jew in the Western world. You want to call me modern Orthodox? All right, call me modern Orthodox. What can I do? I raised my hands in dignity. My dear students, I thank you so much for coming and enabling me to regain a little bit of strength today. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Mori, can you open
it? The recording has stopped.
Are there any questions from around the world? Any questions? I have no questions. Everyone is looking at me, smiling and satisfied. Okay, so I everyone smile. You got to see, you fellas can't see the screen. All right, tomorrow morning I wouldn't miss the shiur for all the type that's going to be wasted this week on who's at fault for what happened on Lag BaOmer. I would rather see it only positive, what we have to do further. I also want to mention shiur tomorrow is normal, very fascinating shiur. We're dealing with Dr. Joe. Next week we only meet on Sunday. Monday is Yom Yerushalayim. And Yom Yerushalayim comes ahead of anything yours truly has to say. So until we meet again tomorrow morning in health and happiness, das vidanya. Thank you for being with me. Kol tov selah.
Shalom.
Thank you.